So I'm going to be talking about Twitter. Oops.
Is there a sound or something?
No, it shouldn't be. Is it in the PDF?
No, this is the keynote.
Well, that's strange. Oh, okay, that, there's quality. Can you open the PDF?
Yeah,
maybe that will work.
That one.
Okay, so this is work that has been done in the Mojave group again, and what I'm going to summarize a paper that's hopefully going to be submitted soon. Okay, so first of all, what is Faraday rotation? Just a quick summary. So if we have a linearly polarized wave like synchrotron radiation is, it's actually a sum of right and left-hand circularly polarized waves, and when they travel through magnetized plasma, what happens is that there's a slight phase shift or between the two, causing a rotation of the plane of polarization, so that if we detect, observe electric vector position angles, they're actually slightly rotated. And that's very much dependent on wavelength, which is actually good because then we can measure the effect. So if we make observations at several different wavelengths, like here, it's four different frequencies from our program, and measure the electric vector position angle, we can fit to get the rotation measure from the slope. And it's also proportional to the electron density and the plane of sight magnetic field component, so that if the rotation measure is positive, the magnetic field is towards the observer, and if it's negative, it's away from the observer. So why is this interesting? Well, we know from simulations that you can form a jet when you have an accreting black hole or accretion disk, and the magnetic field lines get wound up due to the rotation, and you would then expect to see a helical magnetic field. But what we don't know is whether this actually continues all the way down to parsec scales where we can observe this Faraday rotation. So we can think that maybe in the acceleration zone we have a helical field, but then when we encounter the jet encounters and standing shock, then the magnetic field becomes chaotic. And that's one thing we can cope with Faraday rotation observations, so that if we would have a helical field, what we would should see based on simulations is this nice bilateral structure in the jet, so that it's positive on one side where the magnetic field is coming towards the observer and negative on the other side, while if we would have a completely random Faraday screen, then we would see this completely random rotation measure structure. The other thing is that when we actually can get the true direction of the magnetic field in an optically thin jet, so that, for example, a rotation measure of 500 radians per meter squared, it actually rotates the EVPA by 10 degrees at 15 gigahertz, which is not too bad, but at 8 gigahertz, if you want to look if the EVPAs are aligned with the jet or not, you actually have to take the rotation measure into account because the effect can be significant. If we want to see, it's also possible that the Faraday rotation happens within the source itself or somewhere between us and the source. I'll come back to that later. And we can study that by studying the depolarization we see. And then also you might expect that in the core regions of AGN you have more material which would rotate or cause Faraday rotation, or also maybe stronger magnetic fields. So we might expect some kind of a distance dependence. So what we have done, we've observed 191 sources within the Mojave program in 2006 using these four frequencies. And in the end, we have 159 maps which had significant polarization so that we could make a rotation measure map. So this is the largest sample so far studied for parsec scale Faraday rotation. And first results, I've divided the sources into core and jet components. So we see these, if we model fit the jets in VLBI, we see these components, and we can then distinguish the core and the jet. And first of all, it's remarkable that the core components are in the top panel, and here's the jet components, is that nearly all the values are less than 500 radians per meter squared, so that 15 gigahertz, it's not a major effect if you're studying a large sample and you don't take the further rotation into account. The other interesting thing is that the cores do have significantly higher rotation measures than the jet components. And there also seems to be a difference between quasars and VLX, with VLX showing less further rotation than quasars. One additional thing here is that there are several jet components with very high rotation measures as well, over 1,000 radians per meter squared, and it turns out that all of these are within 1 milliarcsecond of the core, so that they are probably still in the self-absorbing part or optically thick part, and therefore we have also studied these isolated optically thin components in the jets, and these come important later when we study depolarization, but it also shows that the pattern rotation there is less than in the all component sample. So, because this is a gamma ray conference, it's interesting to see if there's a direct correlation between rotation measure and gamma ray detection. So I've divided the sources into light detected and non-detected sources based on 1FGL and 2FGL catalogs. And even though this is in logarithmic scale, the rotation measure, and even though the medians are slightly different, the difference is not significant, so the distributions are statistically not from different populations. One thing we do see a difference is that there are many more light-detected sources with rotation measure values than in the non-detected sources. We don't detect enough polarization to calculate the rotation measure, so this is a correlation between polarization and gamma ray flux, so that if we have a higher gamma ray flux, we're also more likely to have higher polarization, in which case we can detect rotation measure. But there's no direct correlation between the two, but it's still important because we want to know the true direction of the magnetic field. So then, where is the Faraday screen? So I said it could be internal to the jet, in which case it would be produced by the low energy end of the synchrotron emitting electrons. And that's a good thing if we see fast variations in rotation measure, then internal rotation could easily explain that. So here with the green tick marks, I marked all the things we see in the jets in our sample. So we actually see quite different kind of behaviors. But the problem here is that according to the standard models, it's the internal Faraday rotation should cause severe depolarization, in which case we wouldn't necessarily detect polarization at all. But maybe with other magnetic field configurations or viewing the sources that through small number of lights of sight could help, and we think that in some sources we're seeing this effect. The other option is that the Faraday rotation is happening somewhere between us and the source, so it's not related to the internal jet at all. It could be galactic Faraday rotation, which we have actually removed the contribution from our maps. It could be intergalactic clouds or a narrow line region of the AGN. And in this case, the rotation measure should not vary over timescales of several years. On the other hand, it could be some kind of a screen which is interacting with the jet. So where the jet bends, or maybe there's a sheath around the jet which is interacting, in which case we could see variations of timescales of years, but it's still difficult to explain very fast variations. So in 3C273 and 3C454.3, we actually see variations in the rotation measuring timescales of 3 months, which are very difficult to explain with external models. So what we can do is to study depolarization and try to understand which method could be in work here. So the thing is that it turns out that internal and external depolarization, they follow the same form for rotations less than 800 radians per meter squared, which is the region where we see these isolated homogeneous jet components. The only problem is that it's very difficult to distinguish between the two because they follow basically the same form. What we have done is to linearize this equation to study for, to fit for depolarization. So here we show this equation in lambda Ford, so that in some sources we don't see any kind of depolarization or components, and in others we see clearly depolarization. And then there are a third group where we see this reverse polarization, where the 8 gigahertz is actually more polarized than 15 gigahertz, which is kind of unexpected. So if we look at the fit values for all the isolated optically thin homogeneous components, this y-axis here shows the slope of the fit, while the x-axis is the absolute value of the rotation measure, so that we have different kinds of behavior. We have the reverse polarization sources here, and then these depolarized sources here. So the line here shows the amount of expected cardiac rotation for internal depolarization in the simple brain model. And we see that most of the components are not on that line, except for these three here. And then this dashed line here shows the upper limit, what we would expect that a random external screen alone would be doing. And it's an upper limit, so we would expect most of the sources to lie below this line. And that's actually where we see most of the depolarized components. And when we did some simulations to study the external Faraday depolarization, we find that if we had used a smaller number of lines of sight, so here the dashed line is the same as the one here, then we can explain most of the observations. So the best fit simulation is circled around here, and it's actually a completely random external Faraday rotating screen, which can explain most of our depolarization observations. But then we have the reverse polarized sources. But it's quite interesting, as it turns out, that all the reverse components belong to either 3C273 or 3C454.3. And also the lines that the components that fall on the line here are all in these two sources. So it's clear that there's something different happening in these two sources, and it could be very well that it's internal Faraday rotation, and then that's very nice because it would solve also for the fast variability we detect in these two sources. So we are performing some simulations which would maybe give more insights into what kind of a magnetic field is needed to do this. So the other thing we did in this paper was to try to solve for the controversial issue of rotation measured radiance. So if we have a helical field, what it also should do is to have a change of rotation measure across the jet from positive to negative, as I showed you in one of the earlier slides. But the problem is that it's very difficult to detect that significantly or to assess the significance of that. So what we did was to take the total intensity structure of three sources. So there's 3C273, NRAO140, and O735 plus 178. And then we created simulated maps where we had known polarization and we expected zero Faraday rotation. But then we added random noise of the same order as in the real data to create these simulated maps. And the idea here was to find out how large spurious gradients could we see in the rotation measure maps just due to noise and finite beam size. So here's an example. These are all simulated maps, not real ones. And what we did then was to take these slices across the jet and take the width of the slice in polarization in all these three sources, and then we looked what kind of gradients we could see. So for example, here you see that it looks like kind of almost a real gradient from positive to negative values, but it's actually just purely due to noise. So for the whole set of simulations, so we have 1,000 simulations of each of the three jets, and here's the width of each of those 13 slices from the previous slide. So it goes from 1.5 to a bit more than 3 beams in jet width. And then we have a maximum simulated spurious gradient we can find. And it turns out that there's a nice trend here, so that the wider the jet, the less likely you are to detect a spurious gradient. So here's an example. If you have a jet which is 1.5 beams wide, and the typical beam width we have is about 1.5 milliarcseconds, we could get a spurious gradient up to 450 radians per meter squared, which is quite high. That's typical order of the detected gradients in the literature. But the good thing was that we also found out that if you use proper error bars for the rotation measure, which are calculated from error propagation, then you typically these gradients were not significant at 3 sigma level. So if you use 3 sigma proper error bars, you can still overcome this. So based on that, we detect gradients in 4 sources in our sample. 3C273, which is interesting because we see a gradient from about 500 to minus 500. so that it's a bit different than the earlier results where all the rotation measure values were positive even though there was a gradient. So this is a further indication of the helical field, but it's we think that it's because we're seeing a different direction of the jet. So the earlier observations were done when the jet was pointing maybe here, so 10 degrees to the north instead of here, and that's why they didn't detect the negative values. But we also see variations in 3 months, which are difficult to explain with external models. The other source is 3C454.3. It's not as remarkable as 3C273, but still significant. And there's another paper in preparation where these observations are combined with other spectral index and polarization observations, and it looks like a large-scale helical magnetic field could maybe explain these observations. And again, there are variations in timescales of 3 months. And then the two other sources, in 2230, we detect a gradient, which is significant according to our criteria, but it's only seen in a very small region, so we've done some follow-up observations, which I need to reduce to find out if it's still there. And in 0923, we see a very sharp, significant gradient at the part where the jet is thought to be bending, so this could very well be interaction with the external medium. And just as a summary, so we see that in the majority of the sources, the rotation measures are less than 500 radians per meter squared, which is quite nice. It's not too bad effect at 15 gigahertz. And then also the magnitude then goes smaller as a function of this, or as expected. There's no direct correlation between better rotation and gamma ray emission, but if we still want to find out the true direction of the magnetic field, we need to consider it. And also we get the line of sight component of the magnetic field. And the jet rotation measures in most of our sources have not changed over time scales of years. If we look at the same positions in the jet, and it could be produced by random external springs, which is also supported by our depolarization observations, except for in these two sources where we see these fast variations and this reverse polarization, which probably needs internal radar rotation. And then our simulations show that we would probably want to have at least two beams wide jet if we are studying transverse rotation measure gradients. Thank you. Nine sources in total where we have a jet which is more than two beams wide. Four of them show a gradient, five didn't. But we do see hints of gradients in several others, so that there is a two sigma gradient or it's just not wide enough jet. So we have done some follow-up observations on those. We didn't try that in the simulations, but I think it's very likely because it's random noise what we put in the data, so it should be possible.
Yeah. And your
these components which I studied in the reverse polarization case, those were all jet components which were isolated. So what we did was to study that we considered isolated components which didn't have any bright nearby other components near them so that we could consider them to be homogeneous and optically thin. So I don't think that's the major part. So these could not be opacity effects. This is the optically thin part of the jet.
Not necessarily.
Well, we had a limit so that we calculated the contribution of all the components around the component in question, and then we had a limit that the component in which we consider isolated has to dominate also in total intensity. So it's unlikely that there would be more components in those.
Okay, thank you again.
Well, it's not only the gradient, it's in 3C273, yes, we see difference, but it's so the gradient changes from minus 500 to minus 700, the lower part of the Well, that's what we were thinking, that it's probably due to internal predator rotation. So that. No, it can't be in 3 months time scale. So the component, there's a component there which changes at 400 radians per meter squared in 3 months, but it only has moved 0.1 milliarc seconds between the 3 months. So it. Yeah, but it's so small that it cannot explain the difference in predator rotation. And it's not moving fast enough. So that's why we think we need internal.
We'll have to talk louder about the external people here. You could use echo partition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the other option. So it could be that something is, the components are expanding, and that's why they are interacting more with the sheath, and that could be another cause for the fast variations. But it's still 3 months is difficult to explain, and we haven't worked out the detailed model. So it's easier with internal rotation.
Okay, thanks again. We'll move on to the next.